the meeting come to order at 9:40. We've been joined in the Hess Committee Room by Representative Mark Hanley, Representative Sherry Davis, Representative John Gonzalez, Representative Betty Davis, Chairing Representative Georgiana Lincoln, Co-Chair Pat Carney, and I see Representative Mary Miller. So we have a full house today. We will be hearing the bills in the following order: HB 18, HJR 73, HJR 73, HB 18, HB 498, and then HB 545. And we are on teleconference. And with that, we will have HJR 73, which is Representative Eileen McLean's bill. And I believe staff is going to make the presentation. I understand Eileen, Representative McLean is ill today. So, state your name.
For the record, my name is Deborah Driver. I'm legislative assistant to Representative Eileen McLean. She is ill today. She wanted me to present this bill for her. Co-Chair Lincoln, Co-Chair Carney, members of the committee. The passage of the Indian Child Welfare Act in 1978 was a landmark decision for Alaska Natives. The ICWA was established to ensure that the best interests of Native children are protected in child custody cases. The Natives fought long and hard to set forth standards and procedures under which American Indians and Alaska Natives children could be removed from their homes, which are much more stringent than those standards set for non-Native children. The ICWA provisions are extensive. I'd like to highlight a few very important aspects of the Act. To proclaim the termination of parental rights for a Native child, the burden of proof must be beyond a reasonable doubt. Remedial services and rehabilitation must have been attempted to prevent the breakup of the family before removal can occur. No foster care placement can be ordered unless the party seeking such a placement has presented clear and convincing evidence supported by a qualified expert witness that serious emotional and physical damage to the child will likely result if such a placement is not ordered. If the Department of Health and Social Services plans to remove a Native child from custody, they must provide notification to the parents and tribe. The Act also sets forth provisions to ensure that when a Native child is removed from his family, preference in placement is given to Native homes. The Act also authorizes the Secretary of Interior to award ICWA grants for the purposes of preventing the permanent removal of a Native child from his home and community. The ICWA, as you know, is subject to state interpretation. Most states have recognized the Act in prompting them to draft interagency agreements with the tribes within their boundaries. The state of Alaska, however, is just beginning to formally implement the law through the signing of the state tribal agreements authorized by Alaska Statute 4710-230G. It establishes powers and responsibilities of tribes in the state when a Native child is taken into state custody. The tribal agreements clarify and strengthen the procedures of the ICWA. Although the drafting of the standard agreement was a collaborative process, the agreement does not address all the salient issues that are important to Native organizations. To date, the state has only developed agreements covering 26 villages, though ICWA should still be followed even if the tribal agreements haven't been signed. Implementing the Act has been frustrated, in Representative McLean's opinion, by the lack of money, lack of expertise, and jurisdictional disputes, which make Native organizations' attempts much more difficult. Some Native organizations in the state have experienced a positive implementation of the Act and have developed a good relationship with the state. Other organizations have not established this cooperative effort with the state for child protection. What frustrates Representative McLean is that still 14 years after ICWA's inception, some village councils do not know their rights and responsibilities under the ICWA and thus are unable to assert them. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is currently putting together a proposal for training some village councils and Native organizations on the provisions of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Because there has been no comprehensive empirical study ever done of the ICWA, especially one which focuses on its implementation in Alaska, Representative McLean believes it is important to examine our experience with this act based on the observations of those people who have been involved in its implementation. Such an examination will help us enhance its effectiveness in Alaska. Included in the review will be an examination of those attitudes and procedures that have prevented its full-scale implementation in Alaska. Representative McLean asserts that from this examination will emerge a complete package of recommendations for how this act can be better applied to protect Native children with the involvement of Native organizations and the state agencies. To help in the effort, Representative McLean would like to recommend that the committee adopt the amendment that would include in the review the involvement of the joint Alaska State Federal Native Commission on policies and programs affecting Alaska Natives, of which she is a member. The underlying principle of the ICWA is to protect the best interests of Native children and to promote the stability and security of Native tribes and families. So Representative McLean would like to ensure that this is being done. She wanted me to emphasize that this resolution is only a suggestion that the review be conducted. It does not carry have the force of law, as you know. I'd like to direct the members' attention to the backup material provided with the resolution. We've included a copy of the law and an analysis of the act that Representative McLean encourages the members to review. DFYS is present, Nina Kenny, to present the department's position on this resolution and answer any questions members might have about the state's role in the Indian Child Welfare Act. And I also would like to note that Assistant Attorney General Rebecca Snow is online in Fairbanks, and she can answer questions, any questions members might have about the legal aspects of the law or the court cases members might have. And I'd like to also note that an individual from the BIA in Juneau is present here at the meeting today. Her name is Nan Smith. And Representative McLean welcomes all the comments from the people on teleconference today, and I will make sure that I convey all of the messages to her about this bill without any sort of questions you might have.
Thank you. We do have six people online to testify. I don't know if there are any questions prior to the testimony. You can just stand by here. We'll begin with Cox of you. Mr. Fred Armstrong. Cox of you, are you online?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. If you could state your name and who you represent for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Value on them, and
other things I've brought up at this time. Thanks a lot, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Is Sue Adams also there in Kotzebue?
Yes, good morning. My name is Sue Adams, and I am the Deputy Administrator of Social Service for Manihok Association. I just have a few quick comments. I'm fully in support of reviewing the implementation of ICWA, and my concern is that in talking with different people around the state and observing the implementation around the state, the cooperative effort that Representative McLean talked about is lacking in many places, and the implementation of ICWA is very inconsistent from one region to another, and I would hope that a review of the Act and its effectiveness would take care of that inconsistency. And I also would like to second what Fred Armstrong said, that I would also ask that the tribe be involved with the review of the implementation of the Act. And I thank you very much.
Thank you. And last, I think we have a Shirley Goldie.
Good morning, this is Shirley Goldie. I'm the program manager for the Manihok Group Home. As being in that position, I see what happens to the children that are taken out of the home for abuse cases and how they're handled and what they return to. I strongly, strongly support this review. I think that they can do a lot of compromise, and I think our tribal operations would have a large effect in reviewing it with us, and I think it's outdated, possibly, because our times and our situations are changing, and it's really unfortunate that people cannot just keep a child in a home. There's a lot of situations that come up. There's a lot of factors that need to be considered, and I think that the stress too much to keep the child in the home or to place them with a relative without thinking of what that child's going to go through, if it's really appropriate, just so that they can state that they're going or abiding by the City and Child Welfare Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will go to Nome, Atina Henderson.
This is Tina Henderson. I work for CORE Tribal Affairs, CORE Incorporated, as their Indian Child Welfare Act liaison.
Please proceed with your testimony.
I am not in support of this review because the spirit of the cover letter that I read alludes to the fact that the state of Alaska's child protection system is failing Native children in Alaska because it abides by the Indian Child Welfare Act. And the Indian Child Welfare Act certainly is not perfect, but negative outcome of an investigation could give the state of Alaska's child welfare system further support not to comply with the ICWA. And this could also affect the implementation of the ICWA at the national level. We also feel that rather than reviewing the Indian Child Welfare Act, a comprehensive review of the state of Alaska's child welfare system should be conducted, specifically within the Division of Family and Youth Services in Anchorage.
Ms. Henderson, is that the end of your testimony? Thank you very much. We have Mary Miller in Nome.
Good morning. My name is Mary Miller. I'm the Director of Tribal Affairs at CORAC Incorporated. We provide Indian Child Welfare Services to 20 IRA and traditional councils in the Bering Strait region and have done so for a number of years. While the Indian Child Welfare Act is limited in scope and does not fully address the needs of Native children in Native communities, our stance is that the provision
proceedings involving private placement for adoption of Native children. So we view proposed bill as such as not really having the proper focus, and we would encourage rather that that the review instead be that of the state system and its implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act. We have seen oftentimes more cooperation from state governments in other areas than we have with the state of Alaska. We have seen effective case management of cases where we've been able to return children home from out of state and have engaged in very cooperative arrangements with other state governments. Them recognizing tribal jurisdiction and the authority of the tribe to have a say so as to where the child is placed. So we would encourage a rethinking of this bill and a refocus according to the concerns that we've addressed here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll next go to, I believe, we've got HJR 13, but I'm sure that that's a typo. Is Don Chersell in Fairbanks?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Don Chersell. I'm the Director of Family Services Department for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. I would first of all like to reiterate to the committee that we certainly agree with the previous speakers. I think that they all bring up some important issues. We certainly agree with Representative McLean. Perhaps the key word here is cooperation and partnerships. They aren't new words. Aside from a review of the implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act, which we certainly support, we support it in light of the fact that the review concentrates on the implementation and not the act itself. The state of Alaska has in the past created a number of forums and discussions on the topic. Perhaps the most recent was in the Division of Family and Youth Services strategic plan for the 90s. I would certainly encourage the committee members to take a look at that state document by the Division of Family and Youth Services, particularly under the heading and under the chapter of creating partnerships, because it is in that chapter of the strategic plan for the 90s of the Division of Family and Youth Services that they speak and address directly all of the issues of the Indian Child Welfare Act. It states in the strategic plan of the division itself that they recognize that although the Division of Family and Youth Services has an important and frequently pivotal role in meeting the needs of children, youth, and families, it is only one part of a much broader system which must work cooperatively and collaboratively to truly meet those needs. It goes on to state that neither DFYS nor any other organization can truly serve children and their families without the help and support of other agencies and organizations, families, and tribal members. Changes in the way in which the state of Alaska relates to Alaska Native tribes are necessary, the strategic plan states. They're necessary to fully implement the letter and intent of the Indian Child Welfare Act, and that the act itself provides avenues for these changes. The coordination between DFYS staff and tribal authorities who are responsible under the Indian Child Welfare Act for making informed decisions about tribal children receiving services from DFYS is neither as frequent nor as effective as desirable. And increased coordination with local tribal representatives will improve the cultural articulation of services for Native children and their families. These are just a few of the brief statements from the state's own and the Division of Family and Youth Services' own strategic plan for the 90s. We strongly encourage Representative McLean and the committee to certainly review the implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act, but also review the implementation of the Division of Family and Youth Services and their strategic plan for the 90s. It is 1992, and we would like to proceed their plan and the implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one more who would like to testify in Cots of you, Kathy Garfield.
This is Kathy Garfield in Kotzebue, and I'd like to state that so far, to my understanding, the majority of the people here are very much in favor of the last statement made by the gentleman in Fairbanks. And I also wanted to point out that it does seem as though the Indian Child Welfare Act currently in place is working for some programs, but there is still concern that it does not work in all areas and that it actually does hamper some programs for providing safety for children. So I would be in support of reviewing the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Thank you very much. We'll come back here to Juno. And Deborah, you said you had some amendments that Representative Eileen McLean wished to offer. Perhaps you could go through those, and it might clarify some of the concerns that have been expressed on the teleconference this morning.
Yes. Actually, the only amendment Representative McLean wanted to insert in the bill is each member should have it before them, I hope. It's an amendment just to, on page 1, line 15, after the word affairs, delete and insert after the word Congress, insert and the joint federal state commission on the policy policies and programs affecting Alaska Native.
I believe there was one other suggested amendment was on line 1 on page 1, and that was deleting federal, so then it would read urging appropriate officials.
Certainly we'd be agreeable to that.
Deborah, also on page 2, the copies of the resolutions shall be sent to, and since we do have the joint federal state commissions on policies and programs affecting Alaska Natives, I thought it may be appropriate also to consider an amendment that would include that group as the copies for the resolutions to be sent to.
We'd be agreeable to that. Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Are there any questions? Representative Miller? Just no. For the information of Mary Miller at Kotzebue, we have a Representative Mary Miller sitting here at the table, too.
Yes, it's nice to hear my namesake out there on the teleconference, and I appreciate all the comments. Actually, Madam Chair, rather than a question, I do have a comment, and it seems as though one of the themes coming through today is that the people of Alaska would like our committee to talk with DFYS. And I believe at the time that Dr. Mala came before us earlier in the session, you had recommended that perhaps we could talk with DFYS. And I believe that in this case, with the ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, having heard the testimony and having read the materials, I believe that a review process is a good idea, and I think that the concerns of the people out there are the same that I see in my district. So I would recommend that the voices we've heard today and their suggestions be followed through by the committee. Thank you.
Representative Miller, we are going to have the FYS back before the committee for a review. Representative Gonzalez.
Do you need to move the amendment?
Yes, we do.
Madam Chairman, I move the amendment, which they are coming through.
Amendment number one, which is as before us, deleting federal, adding.
Correct.
So far, as stated. Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing no objection, we have adopted amendment number one. I would also like to offer, if somebody would move for that, is the addition, under copies of this resolution being sent to the joint federal state commissions on policies and programs affecting Alaska Natives, and that would be inserted probably, let's try to find it. Place here. I would suggest that be under line 11, perhaps right after the U.S. Senate, and then inserting right there. Representative Handel.
Madam Chair, I'll move that amendment and ask that the drafter put it in the appropriate place. I think they have a standard order that they put these things in, so
is
I would
there
move that that be added to the people that are sent to.
Thank you. Are there any objections to amendment number 2 then? Hearing none, we have before us then the, would be the CS for HJR 73S. I would note that we do have Rebecca Snow in Fairbanks online, and also Nina Kenny from DFYS here in the audience. If the committee would like to ask questions or hear from either of those two individuals. Representative Hammond.
Yes, Madam Chair. I would, does the state or the division have a position on this?
Ms. Kenny, I believe, is here, and I don't know if we have a, I haven't received a written position paper on it.
Representative Lincoln and committee members. My name is Nina Kinney. I'm a program officer with the Division of Family Needs Services. We have, the division has prepared a position paper, but it has not been signed yet. I'll be glad to speak to what we're proposing, if that would be.
Proceed.
The Division of Family and Youth Services has been the primary state agency responsible for the implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act since it is the agency responsible for child protection, child custody, and adoption proceedings for children that are in our custody. Impacts of the act include very close working relationships with Native social service agencies and village governments, not only for legal notice as required by the Indian Child Welfare Act, but to work together to find relative or tribal placements when children cannot remain safely at home. With the implementation of the state-tribal agreements, policy and procedures are much clearer, and the division supports ICWA in policy and in practice. Nevertheless, problematic areas remain. The village governments were not adequately funded to implement ICWA, and those villages without staff have a difficult time participating with DFYS in locating resources and planning permanency for the child. Some DFYS staff require additional cultural competence training. The majority of Native children adopted through DFYS are now adopted within the Native culture, but there is still difficulty in recruiting enough Native foster homes to meet ICWA placement preferences. Private adoptions appear to have a high rate of placement out of ICWA preferences. Native children still are disproportionately represented in out-of-home care, and many village governments and Native agencies do not have sufficient resources to provide in-home services to families in order to prevent removal. For these reasons, the Division of Family and Youth Services supports passage of House Joint Resolution Number 73, urging appropriate federal officials to review implementation of the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
What is the wish of the committee?
Madam Chair, I'll move the
Representative
resolution of the individual recommendation.
Is there any objection? That is for the moving of CSHJR 73 with a zero fiscal note?
Yes.
As amended. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. HJR 73 passes out of yes. We will be taking up the 18 next, and we will stand at ease for a moment until Representative Grunberg arrives.
Thank you.
if we can come back to order. Apparently, we are still on teleconference here. We have HB 18 before us, and Representative Max Groenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate your scheduling this. As the members will remember, this was a bill that we had on the floor, and I had a bunch of amendments, and people freaked out, and so the bill's back here. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is put the amendments into a second CS, and it's the lockup 3.5 version. And I'm going to very briefly discuss with you the three amendments and why we put them in, and then Sharon Macklin will talk about something quite different dealing with the psychologists. That she has an amendment to meld them into the bill too, but I'm not going to deal with that. I'm going to deal with strictly this version.
Okay, if you could, Representative Groenberg, just tell us, is this the second CS for
yes.
HB 18 mm-hmm. to be dated 3592 that we're working on? Okay, thank you.
Does everybody have it? Okay, good. Yes, all right. The first thing is we have broadened the title. And frankly, this vehicle is going to be a vehicle that the Senate can use to deal with the various professions. If they come up with combined boards or whatever, the marriage and family therapist, and Sherry Gall is here, will not oppose that. I have said, and I want to put it on the record, that if they're going to deal with the behavioral sciences board in this bill, I do not want any profession in that does not want to be combined. I don't want to see any profession combined against its will, and I have made that commitment. But there may be a way that ultimately comes out of this bill. I don't know. That's why we have a broad title, and that's the only way we could have a title that would fit and still allow whatever we want to do, and that's why we changed the title. The next change, and by the way, what I am contrasting this to is the House Bill 18 that was before the House a couple of weeks ago. The next change between that and House Bill 18 is found on page 3, and this is the second amendment, the first one being the title. The second is a larger amendment, and it was the one I started to offer, and it conforms this bill to Senate Bill 40, which was the bill we did pass, Drew Pierce's bill we did pass last year that was vetoed by the governor. There were two essentially identical bills, and it was the Senate bill that went. And so what we're doing is putting this back in the same shape that the Senate Bill 40 was. And what they did in the Senate, or that one of the senators did, was to specify rather than just saying work in marital and family therapy on line 2, they said 3 courses or 9 semester or 12 quarter hours. They set out the number of hours, and that's on page 3 between lines 2 and lines 13. And that's a fairly minor amendment. Oh, by the way, all of these are supported by the marriage and family therapists, so they're not controversial. Then the second amendment had another Senate amendment in it. And this is the second part of the second amendment that Senator Adams had added to require people who are licensed marriage and family therapists, they now have to report child abuse, but they would also have to report elder abuse and abuse of disabled persons. And so the language that was added is on page 5, lines 24 through 28. And again, the same reporting requirement is mentioned in section 7, and that's at page 8, line 18, requiring that marriage and family therapists report elderly abuse. And section 8 is also the same thing, but for disabled abuse. So those were added. And finally, the third amendment changed the sunset date in the bill. And that is found on page 8, line 7, that the original bill went to 1994. And that was 1994 because it was passed in 1991. And so it's been a 3-year deal. And what we're doing now is making it a 1-year period because that'll give time for the governor's special commission on boards and commissions to make a recommendation and see what we want to do. And this will give it a one-year life, and then there'll be a one-year sunset, and give that basically give 2 years for them to get their recommendations together. So the three amendments in the CS are number one in the title, number two in this sunset date, and number three, the provision that says the specific number of hours they have to take and that they have to report elder and spousal abuse. And I didn't think people, if they understood it, would have had a problem on the merits, but that's what we've done. And I would hope that the committee would adopt the proposed committee substitute. And Chair Max will talk about it. Thank you.
One moment, Representative Rose.
Sure.
Just Representative Davis.
Do you want the committee substitute adopted so it's the vehicle before us or not?
That probably would be a good idea.
Representative
Davis.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the committee substitute.
Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, we have before us the adoption of the committee substitute. Sharon Macklin, if you could join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sharon Macklin, and I represent the Alaska Psychological Association, which has 200 members across the state. We are definitely in support of licensing marriage and family therapists because we feel that licensing of professionals is imperative for the safety of the general public. However, we do have some concerns with this legislation, and primarily with the broadening of the titles, which, as Representative Groomberg has expressed, could be used as a vehicle for combining boards and commissions. The Alaska Psychological Association has looked at combining and has done an extensive study of what's been done across the nation. Currently, there are two states that have combined boards. And from discussing the problems with combinations, we've come up with a list of issues that we are very concerned about, such as with a limited amount of professional psychologists on a board, there's problems involved with evaluations of credentials, evaluations of testing, and also problems with disciplinary actions. I won't get further into some of the other problems that we see with combining, since the issue of combining is actually not before you this afternoon or this morning. I would like to address the proposed amendment that I believe is in your packet. It doesn't have a number on it, but what it does do is it would amend the current bill to extend the Board of Psychologists for a one-year sunset, again, until 1993. And incorporated in that amendment is some language that was passed last year out of your committee in House Bill 163, which was the bill that not only extended the sunset, but also adopted language that required psychological associates to have 48 hours of credit hours and graduate work instead of 24 hours. We are supportive of including this amendment in the Marriage and Family Therapists Board because it will give us a vehicle to be extended. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Sherry Davis.
Actually, I didn't have a question about the amendment. I have another question, so I'll wait.
Representative Hammond.
Just for the, to refresh my memory, does the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners have, what's the fiscal impact? Are their fees covering their expenses?
Actually, to date, it's my understanding that their fees are not covering their expenses. However, we have presented to both the House Finance Subcommittee on the Commerce Budget and the Senate Finance Committee on the Commerce Budget a letter from the association stating that we are very aware of the problems that the state is facing, and we encourage our fees to be raised to cover the cost of the Psychological Association's board.
Representative Betty Davis.
If there are other questions on it, I won't do it, but I was going to ask to move the amendment.
Another question?
Representative Hanley.
What is the status of the extension? Where is the bill that deals with this?
The original bill, House Bill 163, is in its one-year wind-down period, and it is sitting in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee.
Other questions? We do have another person to testify as well. Representative Sheridan.
Well, since Representative Hanley asked about the fiscal note for the psychologists, I'll ask about the one for the marital and family therapists. And obviously, I don't know who's going to answer this, but at some point in the discussion, I would like to know if there's any possibility of the fees being raised on this one as well, so that it would come out even. Costs would.
What is it? I don't know.
I think they agreed to 300.
As you can see, I don't know if you have the. Okay, you don't have the latest fiscal note. There was a fiscal note for Senate Bill 40, the Finance CS, and in that they had an operating of $28,000 and revenue of $28,000. The plan was that they would set the fees to cover the costs of operation, and so the net was zero, and that would be my intent. Let me make you a suggestion. Maybe we could get the staff to distribute this particular fiscal note, and I would request that the committee pass out that fiscal note with the specific intent that the fees cover the cost, because that is what the marriage and family therapists have said. And that I appreciate your pointing this out. This is an old fiscal note.
Okay, thank you.
And Ms. Gall, correct me if what I'm saying. I wanted to say one other thing, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
That I have no problem with the psychologist amendment, with a caveat that if at some point in the process that becomes an endangerment to the bill and that might cause a veto.
Thank you. If there are no further questions of Ms. Marklin, then we will go on to Sherry Gall.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here this morning representing the Association of Marital and Family Therapists. You did consider this bill last year, and the House did pass legislation to regulate marital and family therapists. As you heard, the bill was vetoed, not because the administration does not support the regulation of marital and family therapists. They do. They did not want to create a separate and new board. And that is why the conversation continues regarding combining boards and commissions. As you know, the governor has a task force that is dealing with that, and Senator Pierce, who chairs the Labor and Commerce Committee, is trying to incorporate the administration's position with the legislature's position. And I suspect that the conversation about combining boards will take place in the Senate Labor and Commerce, and changing the title will allow that conversation to take place.
Are there any questions? Representative Hanley.
Not for Representative Sherry Gall. It's our husband this week, last week. I just want to point on the fiscal note, it really is not a zero fiscal note. The revenues only come in every other year, so it's still about $28,000 short on the, it's a biannual license, so every 2 years there's a $28,000 in revenue, and the cost for the board is $28,000 a year, so we're still 50%. You get into that problem where raising the fees too high, it gets to be too high for the people paying the fees, so this doesn't really take care of the concern of a self-sufficient board. I do sit on the task force that's making recommendations, and as Representative Broomberg stated, my personal opinion, if the board is covering its expenses and doing the service that it's supposed to do, I'm a lot less likely to combine it with somebody else just for the sake of combining it. But in situations where boards are not covering their own costs, then I think combining them is something that definitely needs to be looked at. So I do support at least leaving the title broad enough so that this can be addressed, because we all, I think, voted, or most of us voted for this bill last year. So.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Davis? Betty Davis?
Yes, I move for the adoption of the amendment.
Yes, we'll call this number one, but we don't have another one other than this one. We will call it number one. Is there any objection?
Just for the point of
Representative
quick discussion. You always have to be careful when you amend the title, because once it gets to the other side, if there are changes, and the only thing this adds is an effective date, which isn't in the bill now, but obviously if this did have to come off, they can add an effective date and still meet the qualifications of the title, so I don't have a problem with that. I just wanted to point out that they would have to do that if they pulled off this particular board in the other body. So with that, I remove my objection.
Okay. Are there any other objections to the amendment? Amendment number one has been moved. Is there a motion then to move the amended second CS for HB 18? Representative Hanlon.
One quick question. I didn't ask this, and I assume the amendments that we did put it back to the bill that we passed. That's correct.
Yes, it did. If I may.
Proceed.
It absolutely did, with the exception that instead of a 1994, it's 1993 and the title. There is something I need to point out, and I want you folks to understand what's done here, and it has to do with the amendment, and I just want this very clear on the record. It deals with Section 14. AS 4466050E, it's a general statute on the deals with boards and commissions, and it says you cannot combine sunset provisions of different boards. We can, in this bill, simply override that statute for this particular bill. And the reason we're doing it is because we're taking this combined approach. But that just so you know, and just when there are repealers, I always like to disclose what the repealers are. That, and we've done that very specifically, and so I just want that on the record. And the other thing I would request, if you pass the bill out, Madam Chair, is that it's with this specific fiscal note, and you'll probably have to review it for, so it applies to this bill. I'm sorry. There's another one?
We have another fiscal note?
We have Andrew Drell here. Maybe she
Board. Yeah, and I had you down as available. I didn't have you down as, so if you do have another fiscal note, please. And if you've got a fiscal note that you're presenting to us, we'd appreciate a copy of that.
Yes, ma'am. I'm a little puzzled because it was my understanding that you already had a copy of it. The date on it is February 18th of 92. And my apologies. I had a note here that we had forwarded down.
We do have. That is the one that's in the packet.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe...
That's the one that we were working off of.
That is correct. The one that was just copied by Representative Bloomberg's staff and handed to me was 4/15/91. That's why I was.
Okay. Representative Broomberg, maybe you.
So the one you have in your packet is correct as far as the division is concerned.
Representative Broomberg.
Yes. Well, okay. There are slight differences between the two. The total operating in the one is 35. The total operating in the other is 28. And the revenue in the earlier one is 28 versus 24. So it comes out even every other year as opposed to an $11,000 difference. But that's
is it my understanding then that we are working off of the 2-18-92 fiscal note,
yeah,
the one that we originally had?
Yeah,
Representative Hanlon.
Madam Chair, just for the, I think for the clarification, what they did in the Senate is, if you have to look at the backup on the blue fiscal note, which is the latest one, to see how they came up with the numbers. And what they did in the Senate is, I believe, cut down the face-to-face meetings in the first year and some of the travel costs, so that the actual expenses were reduced, and they increased the fee by, I can't remember the amount, a small amount. So that really it's just how this is implemented in the backup of the fiscal note that's the difference. The other thing I'd like to bring up is, if we're going to pass this out, we probably should pass the fiscal note that went with the board. Well, we can do it with either one is fine. We need the narrative for it if we're going to pass out the white one. But we also need a fiscal note for the section on the board of psychologists and psychological associate examiners, because there is a fiscal note with that, and we've added that into this bill, and that should go along with this.
Perhaps what we could do is to just merely make that as a notation that the bill would pass out with that intent to have that fiscal note attached to it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I think that the bill that when the version that should pass out, this had the revenue was 28 and your revenue was 24, I don't know why there's a difference here, and maybe Ms. Boudreaux knows.
Well, not without reading the backup behind it. I know we are in the midst of our large-scale project to review all fees and make sure that nobody is paying too little or too much. And I'm not sure if I don't actually see a separate line item on here for what the individual license fee would be. So they've either maybe revised the number of applicants that they felt might apply, or the actual fee itself to account for that $4,000 worth.
It looks like there were three pages of this, and we only have two. I'm afraid I'm a little bit at a loss.
I think you are right. It does say page 2 of 3, and that is all that we have.
Okay, and then do you only have two?
There is just the two.
It's very short. If the chair would like me to just.
I'm not sure that it's going to make any difference, but go proceed.
The revenues are based on 40 practitioners paying a licensing fee of $600 for a 2-year license. Because licenses are issued on a biennial cycle, revenues are doubled every other year. As indicated, 40 practitioners will not support a licensing program with a 5-member board unless licensees are willing to pay incredibly high licensing fees. As an alternative, the licensee program may have to be supplemented by general funds or fees from other licensing areas. AS 0801.065, Section C, does state fees established by regulation provide that the department may establish a fee that's less than the cost of the activity for which the fee is charged if the department determines that it's not reasonable to impose the full cost of the activity on the applicant or licensee. And so I think in looking at it, trying to figure out what would be considered a reasonable amount and comparing it to other fees and so forth. But that's what they're looking at. One way to lessen costs would be, and I don't know if the representative is open to this or not, but to look at the number of people and determine whether or not an actual 5-member board is needed, or if that could perhaps be cut down. We have other boards, such as optometry, that have 3 members, 2 from the profession and 1 from the public, that seem to be able to function. And I don't know if that would maybe meet your needs closer. That would cut down the amount of the expense.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
My suggestion in light of this new fiscal note is that you pass out the new fiscal note.
We also have a member in Anchorage that would like to testify on this bill, Carolyn Smith.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to testify, Madam Chair. I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Nurse Association with regard to the title of Council League. The Alaska Nurse Association does not oppose the pleasant for your marriage and family service in Alaska. This supports the formation of the board. However, we are opposed to the draft change in the title that is in relation to the combination of organizations or allowing us to be a vehicle.
Ms. Smith?
The boards of psychology.
Ms. Smith?
And clinical social workers and marriage and family service to be combined. Alaska Nurses Association
Ms. Smith?
Afraid that this would be a for the president for the boards to be defined. And the preliminary recommendations of the Governor's Task Force on Boards and Commissions outlined the House Board and those concerns with the implementation that is still going through possibly.
Ms. Smith?
Yes.
Was that the end of your testimony?
Yes, thank you.
You were breaking up a little bit there. I think we got the gist of what you were saying, but you were not apparently speaking into the mic close enough, and it was causing a little bit of a breakup. So if you've got written testimony, we would appreciate you submitting that to us.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you very much for your testimony. What is the wish of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Betty Davis.
I'd like to move CS House Bill number 18. Is that
the second
CS out of committee with individual recommendation with the appropriate physical note attached.
Yes.
Okay, and that's as with the amendment number one.
Yes.
Okay, so this is the adopted second CS. And the fiscal note would be the 218.92 that is attached. Is there any objection?
Can we also move the other fiscal note for the other board?
I think that the intent was to have that as part of this whole package. And if we could just merely state that that was the intent. Representative Bruinberg.
My suggestion, respectfully, would be to pass out the two fiscal notes. So you'd have the blue one, and then you'd have the one that accompanied the other bill, and it would be reported out with two fiscal notes.
The second fiscal note being the
psychologist.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Okay, hearing no objection, we have passed out HB18 as amended. I will hand the gavel over to the vice chair, so that I can discuss HB 498.
Yes, Madam.
Thank you. I believe we still are on teleconference here. I did submit to the committee the statement for HB 498, which is still relevant. Rather than to read it and with the time that we've got left here, I'd just like to briefly talk about the CS for HB 498. And the primary reason that the CS is being submitted at this time, Madam Chair, is, as you would note, that if we increase the percent, expanded the case management from 193% to 185% for pregnant women, that we then have a fiscal note attached for $1.47 million, which is certainly not within our budget this year. HB 498, or the CS for HB 498, would add substance abuse rehabilitative services for pregnant women as an optional Medicaid service. This CS addresses the substance abuse rehabilitation services only. It places the substance abuse rehabilitation services for pregnant women as number one on the priority list. And the number one on the priority list then, as you know, would be the first to go in the priority setting. And if you would note on the memorandum from the legal services memorandum that is enclosed on page one, on this last paragraph on page one, it's dated January 17th, 1992, the notation that you will also note that the draft adds case management and nutritional services for pregnant women as fourth on the priority listing in section three. This addition is not necessary for your bill. It is more in the nature of a cleanup amendment. When these services were added to AS 4707030B in 1988, there was no corresponding amendment to AS 4707035 to place them on the priority list. There should have been. I would submit to you, Madam Chair, that since this bill is for substance abuse rehabilitative services for pregnant women and for case management and nutritional services for pregnant women, as listed under number page two on the CS, and I think could possibly be folded into the next bill that we are hearing, which is HB 545, that I would submit to the committee that we, in light of the time that we've got before us as well, that I would like to hold this bill and to hear the next bill before us, HB 545, and hold that over until tomorrow to see how these two bills might be able to be folded in to one another rather than having two bills come forth that really essentially address some of the very same things. But I just want the committee to know that the intent of putting in a bill for the Medicaid coverage for pregnant women is the extreme high incident of FAS and FAE that we have in Alaska, and that this bill is an attempt to provide or have the women that are pregnant to be able to tap into the services for rehabilitation on substance abuse, especially during the time of pregnancy. And I would then submit, Madam Chair, unless there are any questions, that we hold this bill until after we hear HB 545 and hold that until tomorrow to see if we can hold these two bills together.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
One brief, are we on teleconference?
Yes, we are. We are.
Okay. I had a question, just a brief one. Is there going to be a fiscal note?
There is a fiscal note. Let me see. It isn't the $7 million. We have. Where is it? Is it enclosed? Oh. Madam Chair.
Okay, you're here to speak to which bill?
House Bill 498.
Okay. All right.
Perhaps I could offer some clarification on the fiscal note. There are several residential treatment centers throughout the state that do specific outreach to pregnant women and have several pregnant women in treatment at this time. There's also one specific treatment center in Anchorage that is two-thirds funded by the federal government, one-third funded by the state. At this point in time, that is specifically for pregnant women only. So we are currently providing services to pregnant women through our grant and aid process. We believe that this bill would require us to have one additional staff member that would be located in Anchorage, because the vast majority of our residential treatment centers that provide specific services to women and to pregnant women are located in Anchorage. And I would like to say that providing treatment to women of childbearing age, specifically to pregnant women, is by far the best way to prevent further incidences of fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol drug effects patients.
Are there any questions?
Just briefly, if I might, Madam Chair.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. So that's for the staff position. Let's see. Do you not put a cost on the priority list, assuming that we'll fully fund it? I mean, I assume that providing the services beyond just the staff will cost a
I would like
amount.
To present a revised fiscal note since I saw the committee substitute.
That takes care of my questions.
Representative Davis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm looking at the correct fiscal note, and it has a total funding of 45.3 thousand. There's up above that, the total operating is 43.3, and I don't know if that's just a typo or what.
I think it's probably a typo. That's one of the reasons why I would like to take an opportunity to provide a revised fiscal note.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Other questions? I think there's one other person in this to testify. Gordon Landis, have you ever testified?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gordon Landis. I'm a program officer with the Division of Medical Assistance. You wish me to speak to the CS to 498?
Yes, if that's what we have not adopted the CS. Actually, she asked that the CS be held, so if there's testimony, you really would just be testifying on 498. Do you want to move the adoption of your CS?
I wouldn't desire to have that, Madam Chair, because we are talking about the CS.
Okay. Are there any objections to the new CS? Okay. You may speak to the new CS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to answer Representative Hanley's objection in that we do see, thinking on our feet here, since we haven't seen the CS previously, but we do see a problem with the priority listing that's proposed, in that our current situation is that we are not funding in the FY92 budget clinical social worker services or psychologist services. We are funding as an administrative and private provider effort, item 4, case management and nutritional services for pregnant women. So I foresee some degree of difficulty if a proposed amendment that we've entered to the governor's budget to present the necessary funding to provide LCSW and psychologist services is rejected or suffers from some sort of negative action with the overall budget cut, in that it would be very difficult, I would think, to survive any kind of legal scrutiny where the department was funding the first item on the priority list and not the second and the third. Madam Chair, we would like to take the remainder of the morning and a bit of this afternoon. afternoon and completely revise our position paper and our fiscal note and present it to show. The entire effort gets considerably easier to understand once the new eligibles that are added by the 185 proposal for the position paper. I think the numbers that you see in the collected position paper for the substance abuse rehab services are not likely to change substantially, but we have, as a result of the studying of 545 between the two divisions, medical assistance and alcoholism and drug abuse, developed some new data, and we haven't yet had time to go back and relate it to the 498 substance abuse proposal. So I think we'd join Suzanne Perry in wishing to review the 498 materials that you have looking at as well, simplify it.
Okay. Anything further? Any questions? It has been suggested that this bill be held over until tomorrow. There's no objection, and we'll turn the gavel back over to the chair.
Thank you very much. We will next hear HB 545, Representative Betty Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I think everybody have my statement, and we're short on time, and I'm not going to read the statement. I just want to say that there's a critical need for this bill to be passed and to be passed in a timely manner. I know that many of you heard of some of the concerns that was brought up when TLC was about to close, and it was found out if they didn't have an option, a rehabilitation option, that they would not be able to provide the services, because here in Alaska, we only have the clinical option. And for this reason, this bill has been introduced. There's lots of backup material that's in your package with the physical note attached. I think there are some people online, at least one person online, to testify. We've received many POMs in support of this legislation. Also, different organizations have given their support, which is some of the information that's in the package that you have. So in the essence of time, what I would do, Madam Chair, I would like for us to hear the testimony coming from Anchorage. I don't think there's anyone else online.
We do have one person. Thank you very much. Mr. Ken Taylor in Anchorage, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Do you want to please state your name and who you represent for the record and then continue with your testimony?
Okay, very good. I am the director of the Anchorage Community Mental Health Center and have submitted as part of a group of six mental health center directors, including those from Ketchikan, Juneau, Fairbanks, and Mat-Su area, a paper endorsing House Bill 545. I believe that is attached to with the package that you have. Running down through real quickly, the basic positions is that we do endorse the bill adopting targeted case management for severely emotionally disturbed persons under the age of 21 and for chronically mentally ill adults. And also rehabilitation services for chronically mentally ill adults as part of the Alaska Medicaid plan. The position of the group is that there are some abilities for how this can be implemented. Our primary concern and position is that people currently eligible for services should not lose access to any services through these changes. The recommendation is for program eligibility for these options to be defined consistent with AS 4730545. Scanning down through the position paper in interest of time, under funding section, we do endorse the concept of maximizing federal participation in the cost of providing mental health services. We do believe very strongly, however, that this plan should be advanced in providers are defined as legal entities approved by the Division of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities as meeting the requirements under IS 4730540 through 4730620. Basically, I think the position paper, and it certainly fills in some other data, we are very interested in making this happen this year. We do believe that.
Anchorage, are you there? Anchorage? In case you can hear me, we have been cut off on your end somewhere. We'll try and reconnect you. Instead, we just have a few more minutes to go here. Mr. Landis, perhaps you can proceed with your testimony. And again, for the record, if you could give your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Gordon Landis. I'm a program officer of the Division of Medical Assistance. You have in your packets, I noticed, our position paper on 545 and a series of fiscal notes. This is an extremely technical item have me have services for this group. And notice that this particular, the way this bill is worded, even with some suggestions that we make in the position paper, would include substance abuse services for pregnant women from your bill. And I don't know exactly where to start except to say that basically this is a option that sort of perpetually poor states, such as Oregon, cite them particularly because we know the most about them, have adopted a considerable number of years ago and have used to virtually replace the public sector clinic option, particularly for mental health services. The clinic option requires physician supervision on site to some degree, and it requires that all of the services that you give ill people be given in the clinic and not elsewhere. The rehabilitation services option, which is in many respects when you get to a particular small volume, difficult to define service, a very murky concept federally, and we try to avoid describing all the services that are rehab services. But the primary rehab services that we're talking about, particularly when this is focused on the mentally ill and on substance abusers, are diagnosis, therapies, some degree of skills retraining. In the rehab option under the Medicaid federal structure, you can deliver those services anywhere, and they need not be under the direct supervision of a physician. The way both of these treatment services have described themselves to us in medical assistance is that increasingly they find that the most effective treatment is offered off-site in people's workplaces, in residential group homes, or in patients' actual homes. These services are being provided by both alcoholism and drug abuse grantees and the community mental health centers. They are simply not being Medicaid funded. The degree to which we are funding clinic services is detailed in the position paper from the Division of Mental Health. But what this would do, basically, is replace the public sector clinic option that's currently in the statutes with the rehabilitation option, and would allow Medicaid funding to follow these services as they have gone out into the community and out into people's homes. The structure of rehab services is probably broader. I say that very hesitatingly and vaguely. We can probably, in discussions with federal program authorities, find ways to cover services that are not currently covered under clinic services. And we don't yet know the full extent of the services that are being offered out there to which would fit with minor changes. Medicaid federal requirements. It's a matter of considerable dealing with the federal government. The case management portion of HB 545 is something that the ADA grantees do. They call it aftercare in their system, as Terry informs me. And it is not currently funded by Medicaid. The case management functions to a large degree in community mental health centers are not currently funded by Medicaid funds. So there's a potential for new funding to enter these state grantees' funding. funding stream. And as Ken Taylor says in his position paper and his testimony, these HB 545 becomes a refinancing measure where basically you're substituting federal Medicaid matching funds for state-only grant funds. The mathematics of that are very complex. If you had a chance to look at the three fiscal months, I don't know that you would necessarily gain a sense of the advantage to be gained by adding case management and rehab services. We estimate that if you look at it in terms of say, FY94, that we have a grant decrease from the two divisions that totals about $806,000. That then becomes federal matching funds in the Division of Medical Systems by interagency transfer. And automatically, and this, I apologize that this sounds like a telephone scam, but in point of fact, if you send us 806.3, we can double your money by gaining the federal match. If you take out the new cost of doing business, which is a position, the state general fund match for a position in alcoholism and drug abuse, and 25% of all the costs that we incur in medical assistance for processing these new claims for case management and rehab services, and a percentage that we suggest in the position paper, other states have found some degree of retention by grantees necessary in order that grantees can maintain an audit track that satisfies the more rigid federal requirements and can adjust their services and make it extremely difficult and for small grantees very dangerous move from grant funding to fee-for-service funding, which is an extremely difficult thing for smaller grantees in particular. If you allow that as a cost of doing business, the net savings to the state of all of 545 is at least $482,000 in net savings. If you look at it from a grantee's perspective, which I think Ken Taylor's position paper addresses very directly, the grantees in both of these systems under the current fiscal crisis are facing cuts of perhaps a couple of $1 million combined between the two divisions. And I'm sure you're aware of the press with the recent problem funding TLC in Anchorage. It's a forerunner of what will probably happen to grantees in both divisions. By the grantees, through their servicing divisions, giving up 806.3, and this sounds even more like a telephone scam, we pay them $2,015,900. So the grantees are prepared for the forthcoming budget cuts by having new monies from their perspective of $1,209,600, which will probably not fully compensate for the cuts that they would get in state grant funding, but would certainly enable them to maintain services that they wouldn't otherwise be able to maintain. So I apologize for the complexity of this, and I've been trying to figure out some sort of way to amend our discussion of fiscal note to discuss this in a little more clearly. I plan to do that in the next few days. We can find some way to roll this together so the net effect is clear.
Thank you, Mr. Manders. I'm sure that there will be some questions, but I would like to, because of the time, I believe Anchorage is back online and we are limited here. Anchorage, are you there now?
Yes, this is Ken Taylor. I'm basically asking to defer any further comments back to the position paper. I think you heard most of what I had said.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. I believe that we were cut off right at the very end of your testimony, so if you can send that in, we would appreciate it, and we can submit that to each one of the committee members. Was there anything in summarizing that you wish to add?
Just basically, I believe that you already have the paper. Again, this is, we're very supportive of it, and all our basic points are made in the paper, but I know the Representative Davis' office does have the paper there. I think you already have it in hand.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor, and I apologize for you being cut off, but we also appreciate your patience in waiting online to testify. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions of Mr. Landis before? We have two others, and then I would like to stop at 10:15.
I have a committee meeting, and I'm one of the
two
subcommittee members.
Let's just finish up then with Mr. Landis. Are there any questions that we have.
Madam Chair, are you saying there are other people to testify?
Here in Juneau, we have Deborah Smith and Susan Perry who are signed up to testify. Is it possible that you can come back tomorrow and finish that up? Okay. That's what we will do is we will hear this bill tomorrow and appreciate your patience with this. Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned at 10:10.